This is VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Novak. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Dan Friedel reports on Ukrainian villages being rebuilt. Anna Mateo has this week's words and their stories. Faith Perlow and Brian Lynn have a story about the Native American Rez accent. Brian Lynn reports on a star that survived a massive explosion. And Dan Friedel returns for a story on the effects of climate change at a summer music festival. But first,
outside the Ukrainian village of Yahidne are the remains of a small school. The building was partly destroyed in the early weeks of the Russian invasion. The school's abandoned classrooms are unlikely to hold students again anytime soon. It is just one of the many buildings in Yahidne that have been damaged during the war. But Yahidne and other villages are slowly rebuilding. Russian troops retreated from the northern Chernihiv area a few months ago. People are repairing homes. The sound of building tools fills the air. Volunteers from all over Ukraine and other countries are coming to help, because there is so much to do before winter begins. Among the workers are a copywriter and a cameraman who have been repairing the roofs of apartment buildings in front of the school. Denis Ovcharenko and Denis Hushik came from the capital, Kyiv. They joined a volunteer building organization called Dobrobot. The men and 22 other volunteers help the villagers return to their homes as soon as possible. No one in the village plans to rebuild the school yet. Villagers prefer not to talk about the place at all. That is because Russian forces used the school as a base of operations. Most of Yahidne's nearly 400 people spent a month in the school's basement or underground area. They were held captive to be used as human shields to protect against an attack by the Ukrainian army. Russian troops only rarely permitted the villagers to climb upstairs and go outside. 10 people died in the dark, crowded basement. Survivors blame the lack of fresh air. Russian troops left the village at the end of March. The Dobrobot group plans to repair the roofs of 21 houses in the coming weeks. The volunteers include teachers, athletes, and programmers. About 80% of them have no experience in construction. Yahidne is just one of the villages in northern Ukraine to have suffered from Russia's aggression. And Dobrobot is just one of the groups taking action. A father and son from the Czech Republic decided to spend their yearly family trip in Ukraine this year. Mikhail and Daniel Kahl see each other for only a few weeks each summer. The son, Daniel, studies in the United States. "We wanted to do something meaningful instead of just being tourists," he said. That is how they came to the town of Makariv in the Kyiv area. Many buildings there were destroyed or damaged in the first weeks of the war. The father and son joined the volunteer movement Building Ukraine Together. Since 2014, the group has helped restore damaged buildings in eastern Ukraine. For several days, Mikhail, Daniel, and young people from different parts of Ukraine worked to rebuild the Makariv Fire Department. I'm Dan Friedel.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. There are many kinds of nuts. There are walnuts, almonds, hazelnuts, cashews, and pistachios, just to name a few. Nuts are good for you. And they come in their own very hard shell. So, let's say you want to eat a walnut, but do not have a nutcracker. A nutcracker is a tool to open or crack the hard shell of a nut. Without a nutcracker, you might try to open it with something like a hammer or even a sledgehammer. We use a hammer in building jobs to attach pieces of wood with nails. And we use a sledgehammer to break up rocks, tear down walls, or destroy things. A sledgehammer is so big and heavy that most people need to use both hands to raise it. So, if you use a sledgehammer to crack a nut, you will probably destroy the nut inside. Then you will have nothing to eat, but very small pieces of nut, mixed with its hard shell. Not good. In American English, this expression means someone uses more force than is necessary. We also use it to describe problem-solving methods that are extreme. The methods are excessive. And in using such over-the-top or extreme measures, you can harm your own cause. For example, a store owner called the police to report a violent person who was threatening employees and holding him hostage. When the 20 police officers arrived to the store, the violent person turned out to be an 80-year-old woman who was unhappy about a purchase and refused to leave. The police captain probably would have said something like this: "Her? I brought 20 police officers for her? That's like using a sledgehammer to crack a nut." And the store owner would possibly be fined for calling in a false report. Sometimes we use this expression to describe a punishment that is over the top or does not fit the severity of the crime. Let's say a child disobeyed his parents and ate ice cream before a meal. The father punished his child by taking away his food for 3 days. That is definitely using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. In other words, the punishment does not fit the crime. Sometimes this expression means the solution to a small problem is overly complex. For example, once, at a bookstore, too many people showed up for an event. They had to wait in long lines, and some could not get into the store to speak with the writer. So now, the bookstore asks people who come to events to sign 3 forms, saying they understand they may have to wait and may not get in. Talk about using a hammer to crack a nut. Please note, when using this expression, we sometimes say hammer instead of sledgehammer. A hammer may be smaller, but the damage is still the same. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Is a way of saying the words in a language that happens among people of one area or region of a country, but not another. Many people who study languages, linguists, predicted in the 1960s that accents would disappear in America. As Americans moved across the country, they said English would become standardized, meaning that it would be spoken the same way everywhere. But sociolinguist William LeBove of the University of Pennsylvania says, while some accents in America are disappearing, others are growing stronger. One of these regional accents is Native American English, known as the Rez accent. It is spoken in many indigenous communities in the United States and Canada. The word Rez is shortened from the word reservation. Reservations are areas of land in the United States and Canada that are kept separate for Native Americans or indigenous people to live in. Kalina Newmark is from the Saulteaux region in Canada's Northwest Territories. Her ancestors were called the Dene people, but she does not speak her tribe's language of Slavey.
Newmark went to Dartmouth College in the U.S. state of New Hampshire. The school is known for its indigenous student population. There, she met other indigenous students from all over North America. Newmark noticed something very interesting about everyone's pronunciation. The English they spoke shared some similar qualities, although they came from different language backgrounds. Newmark and another student, Nicole Walker, decided to examine the Rez accent when they were given a project to study a non-English language. They realized that the Rez accent had never been studied before. Walker is a Lakota person from the Standing Rock Reservation in the states of North and South Dakota. She said linguists have studied other forms of English, like African American English and Chicano English, which is spoken by Mexican Americans. They recorded discussions and interviews with 75 people from different tribes and nations all over North America. Their findings were published in Language in Society in September of 2016.
The Dartmouth team found that indigenous communities speak different English dialects, but these ways of speaking shared prosody patterns. Prosody describes the music of a language. It includes pitch, how high or low the sounds of the voice are, rhythm, the beat of stressed and unstressed syllables, and intonation, or the changes in pitch when speaking. James Stanford is a sociolinguist at Dartmouth. He guided the students in their study. He said that the most important quality is how the pitch and intonation rises and falls like a song. The feature was named after the character Thomas Builds the Fire, played by Evan Adams from the 1998 film Smoke Signals. The movie was the first to be made and performed by Indigenous people. The group identified another feature that appeared unique to Indigenous populations. The pitch rises at the end of their sentences. Stanford said that in standard English, speakers usually end their sentences by dropping their pitch levels lower. Indigenous speakers end their sentences with a middle or higher pitch. The final important feature is the timing of the syllables, or the rhythm. Some language experts describe languages like French and Spanish as syllable-timed. Each syllable takes up the same amount of time, Stanford said. English is not syllable-timed. It is stress-timed, meaning that only stressed syllables are said at regular places in speech. The unstressed syllables are shortened. The team noted that the res accent of English is syllable-timed.
Newmark thinks that the res accent possibly came from different native tribes interacting in the 1880s when Indigenous peoples were placed on reservations. The Native American and First Nations children were forced into schools and had to speak English. Twyla Baker is a citizen of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation. She is also president of an Indigenous college on the Fort Berthold Reservation in the state of North Dakota. She said that the Rez accent is a form of adaptation. She said that before Native Americans came into contact with Europeans, the tribes connected with each other. They traveled, traded, and built political connections with other tribes. This led to many Indigenous people learning 4 or 5 languages. Baker knows that many people think that the Rez accent is not correct English. They may even make fun of it. But she wants Indigenous people not to feel bad about who they are, where they come from, and how they speak English. I would love for our young people to feel that they are accepted not just in the spaces that they occupy in Indian country, but when they step off the reservation, Baker added. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Faith Perlow.
Scientists have identified a star that they say survived a massive explosion and ended up being brighter than before. The star is a kind known as a white dwarf. These are very dense objects that have a mass about equal to the sun. but they can be as large as planets like Earth. A white dwarf is formed when the star burns off all its central nuclear fuel and loses its outer layers. Astronomers observed the white dwarf star with the Hubble Space Telescope. The telescope is operated by the American space agency, NASA. The Hubble has discovered the oldest burned-out stars in our Milky Way galaxy, NASA reported. Some ancient white dwarf stars seen by Hubble are estimated to be 12 to 13 billion years old. That is nearly as old as the universe itself. The observed star is in a galaxy called NGC 1309. It is about three-quarters the size of our Milky Way. The white dwarf is about 108 million light-years from Earth. A light-year is the distance light travels in a year. The observation team said that at some point the white dwarf reached a mass that was 1.4 times the sun's mass. This led to thermonuclear reactions in the star's center that caused a supernova event. NASA describes a supernova as an extremely bright, super-powerful explosion of a star. A supernova takes place at the end of a star's life. The scientists say the supernova should have killed off the white dwarf star, but did not. The research was led by a team at the Las Cumbres Observatory in California. The lead writer of a study describing the finding was astronomer Curtis McCulley. He told Reuters news agency, "During the explosion, radioactive material was produced. This is what powers the brightness of the supernova." He added that some of the material was left over in the surviving remnant star and acted as fuel to heat it. "We were quite surprised that the star itself had not been destroyed, but had actually survived and is brighter than before it exploded," McCulley said. There are different kinds of supernova events. Each depends on the size and chemical makeup of the star and the power of the explosion. This observed white dwarf produced an uncommon kind of supernova called Type 1AX, the Las Cumbres Observatory said in a statement. The team said this kind is less bright and weaker than traditional Type 1A supernovas. Scientists believe this kind of supernova does not destroy the white dwarf. Instead, it leaves behind an undead remnant. This theory is confirmed by the new observations, the research team said. "We have called these objects zombie stars for this very reason. They died, but not quite," McCulley said. Earlier experiments involving supernova activity had suggested that in some cases, white dwarf stars were able to survive these kinds of events. "It's exciting to think that was telling us something about the actual physics of these supernovas," McCulley added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Bonnaroo is a well-known music festival that is held each year in the southern United States. The four-day event is held on a farm in rural Tennessee. It is known for using earth-friendly practices. But last year, the planet's changing climate forced the event's cancellation. A rainstorm flooded parts of Tennessee just before the start of the 2021 festival. The storm killed 20 people. Weather experts say 50 centimeters of rain fell on August 21st. That set a record for an area not near an ocean. The wet weather made it impossible for the expected 85,000 people to get to the festival's location, about 100 kilometers from Nashville, Tennessee. Janie Camp is a civil and environmental engineering professor at nearby Vanderbilt University. She said, "One problem with heavy rains in Tennessee is that much of the area sits on hard limestone that does not absorb water. We're seeing these more intense precipitation events that don't align with the historic data," she said. This year's Bonnaroo took place in mid-June without a problem, but organizers who put on large outdoor events such as Bonnaroo worry that changing weather patterns will put future festivals at risk. Andrew Joyner is the climatologist for the state of Tennessee. He said, "It is hard to know if Bonnaroo is going to be more affected by extreme weather in the future, but," he said, "it's definitely vulnerable to it." Because of such risks, the organizers of Bonnaroo are trying to fight climate change in a small way. During the four-day festival, the farm becomes the size of a small city. The event uses solar power and has recycling and compost areas. People who come are given free meals if they help clean up by collecting items to recycle. During the festival, a group called Clean Vibes helps with recycling and waste collection. Anna Borofsky is the co-founder of the company. She said, "We are basically the public works department for a temporary city." Clean Vibes aims to keep half the festival's waste from reaching landfills. Between 2002 and 2019, the group kept over 3,500 metric tons of waste away. Food waste that ends up in landfills creates the greenhouse gas known as methane. Bonnaroo organizers are also trying to help make the area more energy efficient. While this year's festival was dry, air temperatures were over 30 degrees Celsius. The area's power company said two demand records were set during the week of the festival. The Bonnaroo Works Fund pays for energy improvements in homes nearby. Volunteers go to the homes of low-income families and put in new lights, fix water pipes, and make other improvements to help people stay cool in the summer and warm in the winter. Joyner, the state's climatologist, said, "Tennessee needs more information to continue preparing people for bad weather. The weather data would help people make improvements for their homes. It would also help organizers of other large outdoor events." Borofsky of Clean Vibes said, "She knows what we're doing at this one event for one weekend isn't changing the world." But she added that what her group does is evidence that it can be done on a larger scale in other applications. I'm Dan Friedel.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Dan Novak.